Hi, I'm Alexandra Edwards.
I'm Corey Gergen.
And I'm Molly Slavin.
And this is Technically Pop.
So for our inaugural episode, we're going to be looking at Veronica Mars, the first three seasons, which aired in the early 2000s, and the most recent season, season four, which came out in the summer of 2019.
We're going to spoil literally everything that happened.
Yeah, so if you have not watched Veronica Mars season four yet, probably pause this podcast, go spend several hours with it, and then come back, and the conversation will make much more sense to you.
And our rantings will make a great deal more sense as well.
Absolutely.
It's always a great way to start a new podcast by saying, please don't listen to this until much, much later.
And when you do, you're going to get a lot of anger thrown in your face.
We do have a lot of anger, I think, simmering under the surface here.
Yeah, so I think one helpful way to start might be just to go around and explain our history with the show and maybe quick takes on the new season.
Sure. Okay, so I'll start. I'm Alex. I actually did not watch Veronica Mars live initially when it aired. I think it began in 2004.
That seems right.
Yeah, I caught up with it in the summer between seasons two and three airing. So I watched the first two seasons kind of binge and then watched the third live and then contributed to the Kickstarter for the film that kind of revived the series and its whole world. And then, of course, binged, because now we all binge, season four. That's just how we do TV now. Yeah.
I watched Veronica Mars live from the beginning. I was the same age as Veronica, so when she was a junior in high school, I was a junior in high school. And so I kind of followed her all the way through. The original series ends with her as a freshman in college. Then I decided to rewatch all the original seasons before watching season four. So Alex and Corey had to deal with a lot of my remembrances because I insisted on rewatching it before I'd come around to the new season. So they had to deal with a lot of my exclamations at them about what a perfect show the first season especially was.
Oh my God, it was.
It really was. But I loved it. It sounds very corny, but like I kind of grew up with her in the last stages of adolescence.
That's really cool, actually, because I was a couple years older.
Yeah.
And so I think I was out of college by the time season three started. But I feel like that must have been really interesting.
It was really fun. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I was either finishing college or had just finished college when the first season aired. And I was sort of a casual fan. My now wife, not at the time, but she was very into it. And I watched alongside her and enjoyed it sort of casually, but I didn't catch every episode until the DVDs, and then I came back around and had my like deep dive after the series had finished running. And we are also Kickstarter contributors.
Oh, yeah.
And I found the stickers that came in the mail just yesterday. I was looking for something else and I found the stickers that I believe it says I saved Veronica Mars on one of them.
Like those I saved the Fox Theater ones.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yes.
We're going to get into that.
So what did everybody think of the new season?
Well, I watched it the latest of anyone, I think, and I had dark suspicions because the internet had a lot of headlines. I had some friends from college who were big marshmallows with me texted and said stuff like very ominous texts, like, have you seen the new season yet? And once, I've never told them this, but I walked in on Alex and Corey having a conversation and they spun around and said, did you hear us? And I said, no, but I absolutely heard, which is my first reveal of that. So I went into it knowing it wouldn't be great, but you know, there were some things I liked, and there were a lot of things I did not like.
I think it can be really hard with a property like this, right, where there's so much nostalgia, like, built up around sort of the original seasons of the show, right? So I remember even watching season three and thinking, this is not as good as seasons one and two, right? And now it's been, 15 years, right, since we first met Veronica on that dark, kind of wet, neon-reflected street outside of that skeezy motel. And it can be hard, I think, now coming into the show to experience it without all that baggage of all the nostalgia, right? Will anything ever live up to what you thought it was?
And the answer is no.
Yeah.
But I'm also now nostalgic for the seasons that I didn't like. Like, I watched the first episode of season 3 the other night, and like, I found Piz suddenly endearing.
I loved Piz right from the start.
he needs a haircut, but otherwise he's adorable and funny.
I also, rewatching these, this is, you know, going to sound kind of corny, but, like, I sort of remembered what it was like to be in my late teens. And at several moments I thought, I wish I could feel this deeply about anything ever again. Like, it transplanted me back to what being 16 was like. And I thought, don't you remember when you used to be passionate about things and, like, feel things really deeply? And so that...
Now you're just a cold husk of a
person. Now I'm just a cold husk of a person. But in a weird way, rewatching these made me remember, like, what that feeling was like.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
Which is why season 4 did not live up to some hopes I had for it.
I think season 4, though, genuinely, and obviously, like, we're tipping our hand here a little bit, but season 4 objectively is not as good as seasons 1 through 3, and I'm going to even say as the film. Agree, disagree?
Borderline, definitely agree with the first statement. Borderline agree with the film statement.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would need to rewatch the film, but I don't remember liking the film very much.
Oh, okay.
I remember not liking it when it came out in 2014. Is that right?
Yes.
13, 14.
Yes.
I remember not liking it then. Upon rewatch now, I liked it better than I had originally.
Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about nostalgia. Like, the film is truly just a nostalgia trip, right?
Yeah.
Like that's kind of its purpose. Yeah. But I was so nostalgic for it. I just loved it. I also had, like, a deep emotional connection to the show, and it came to me in a moment where I was very upset about a lot of things, like, in life. Like, that sounds very dramatic.
What I was just saying.
No, but,
yeah.
But definitely, yeah. So I remember watching episodes of it and sort of feeling like this is a world I would rather kind of immerse myself in rather than whatever the hell is going on in my real life, right?
Yeah, or like, yeah, I found myself wishing that I could respond to the world in the way that Veronica responds to the world.
Yes,
that's
absolutely
really what I want.
Yes.
Is just to have that inner monologue always running through my own head. Yes.
Yeah. And her comebacks.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, my kingdom for her comebacks.
So here's just kind of an open-ended question we can throw out to everybody. What did you actually find either the most interesting or the most frustrating about the show? And we can kind of think about the show as a whole, but maybe specifically about season 4. Most interesting, most frustrating?
The most interesting, it's the same for me, which is the way that season 4 picks up Neptune as this sort of space of great wealth disparity, and a space where the wealthy people are actively engaged in maintaining that disparity and exacerbating it. So you have Big Dick, one of the many great names in the show. Big Dick, right, is coming out of prison and is sort of engaged in less than legal ways to buy a property.
And we should, like, to kind of go back a little bit in the world of the show, right, Big Dick is in prison because in season 2, right, Veronica has essentially thrown open the door onto his shady real estate practices, and in the process ruined the retirement plans of one of her teachers at Neptune High, right? That poor man with his boat.
Yeah, he couldn't buy the boat.
I don't remember much about him, but he led the Future Business Leaders of America, and he just wanted that boat to
retire. And he refused to sell the stock when Veronica told him it was bad because he didn't want to screw over whoever bought the stock.
Because there's no, you can't just dump stock. That's what he says, right?
You can't just dump it. Someone has to buy it.
Someone has to buy it from you, right? So he's a really ethically good person, right? So Veronica exposes this whole kind of real estate fraud scam and sends Big Dick to prison. So season 4 picks up, he has gotten out.
Yeah, and there's this whole setup where he's using his sort of shady friends that he met in prison to depreciate the value of sort of local businesses so that he can sweep them up and gentrify.
But is he using them or are they using him?
It's a fair question.
Right?
Yeah. And it's sort of, that's one of the interesting tensions in the show. But it's, and I'm getting ahead of what we're going to talk about, but that whole plot sort of just becomes a red herring to this other plot that I think is much less interesting. And that's what I find frustrating about how the arc of the new season plays out, is that it started out by giving me what I want from Veronica Mars, and then it pulled that out from underneath me and gave me something else that I was much less interested in.
I feel like Veronica Mars always gets really close to telling me something interesting about land use and never quite gets there.
It's the Chinatown problem, right?
It's because the Chinatown problem.
It wants to build on this world of California noir where land use scandals can somehow be kind of these really interesting and intricate, dirty kinds of stories about corruption, right? But the show can't really ever land.
It can't stick the landing.
Yes.
It gets really close to saying something about how rich white people in Southern California use Mexico, and it never quite gets there. It wants to say something interesting about gentrification, and it just stops very, very short. There's a season 2, I think, arc about incorporation of the city of Neptune that, again, like, almost gets there and, like, doesn't quite. It's, like, always on the precipice of saying something I wanted to say about land use and gentrification, and it can never quite get there.
Well, and where it stops often is, like, Schoolhouse Rock's version, right? Like, the incorporation episode, which I just recently rewatched, there's multiple moments where characters explain why they are against incorporation in a very, like... Like, we get this footage of Veronica voting, which I love, and her voiceover is like, here's why I'm voting no. And then Keith confronts someone who is for it and explains, I'm not voting with you, and here's why.
Is it Woody?
Yes, it's Woody. So Woody has called him in to, there's an unconscious high schooler in his hotel room, and he calls Keith in to help him safely get her to a hospital without it becoming scandal. And during this moment, I believe it's during that interaction where Keith's like, I'm not voting with you.
Yeah. And all of that is really interesting because, of course, that scandal from Woody's perspective is all manufactured, right? That he has somehow, like, because he's a pedophile, right? I mean, spoilers for season 2, but we know that Woody
spoilers for something that aired a decade ago.
More than a decade
you're
ago.
You're right. You're right.
A decade ago.
Almost 15 years ago.
But we know, you know, in hindsight, right, as the mystery unfolds and as we learn kind of why Big Dick's son Beaver is driven to...
Yes, their names are Dick and Beaver. I just want us all to take a minute on that one.
Beaver's is a nickname.
You're right.
His name is Cassidy.
His name is Cassidy.
But I just lost my train of thought.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
I thought it was important our listeners know that.
He does clarify multiple times that his name is Cassidy.
But no one ever calls him Cassidy.
Except for Veronica, which she feels like it's a really big kick in the teeth, right? That he still is going to kill her.
Yeah.
Even though she's the only person in seemingly all of Neptune who has treated him with any kind of respect at all.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. So, of course, we know as the mystery unfolds that Woody is not interested in this teen girl, right? That is not sort of Woody's predilection as a pedophile. And he, in fact, has staged this whole scandal, number one, for Keith to take the fall, right? Because Keith is the one who then is... Keith is the one who is photographed removing this woman from a hotel room at the Neptune Grand. But also as a kind of misdirect, by the way, I don't sexually assault young boys. See, I had this
beautiful young woman
in my hotel room.
To go back to, Molly, your point about Mexico, there's also Weevil.
Yes.
Right? Who is... both interesting as a character and not interesting enough as a character,
correct.
I think.
Yes.
So he, and I, in rewatching the pilot, I forgot how quickly he comes in. There's a brief voiceover from Veronica where she explains that she goes to the school with rich people and she's a private investigator. And then we see Wallace, who becomes her friend, taped to a flagpole because he has snitched on Weevil's gang. And Weevil,
and he, like, Wallace is new to town.
Yes,
so he
Wallace
doesn't know not
is
to.
New to town and works at the convenience store, which
Sack and Pack.
Another great name. And yes, doesn't realize that he shouldn't snitch on the biker gang. And Weevil comes zooming through and threatens Veronica multiple times.
That was cool. What she did? Heading me off for that phone.
Well.
My bitch! Weren't you supposed to wait for me at the flagpole? Not sure I could have made that any clearer. Okay. I get it. Very funny. Yeah. I guess we're even now, right?
You get what, boy? You get that you're a dead man walking? Is that what you get?
Leave him alone.
Sister, the only time I care what a woman has to say is when she's riding my big old hog. But even then, it's not so much words, just a bunch of oohs and ahs, you know?
So it's big, huh?
Legendary.
Well, let's see it. I mean, if it's as big as you say, I'll be your girlfriend. We could go to prom together. What? What seems to be the problem? I'm on a schedule here, Vato.
Dude, I'm gonna bloody talk to you like that.
Sounds like your buddy here wants to see it, too.
Oh, hell, I'll show you mine.
Yeah. Hey, let's Coombs.
What on God's green earth is going on here? All right, gentlemen, move along. Veronica. Why does trouble follow you around?
By the end, it becomes clear that he's the gangster with the heart of gold.
Right.
Correct, yes.
But also never, like, that dynamic never advances beyond that, right? That they are sometimes at odds, and then they are sometimes aligned.
Correct.
Never aligned romantically.
Right. Well, we find out later, of course, Weevil has been having an illicit relationship. Or it's not truly illicit, but a secret relationship with Lily Kane, right? Which then puts Weevil on the red herring list of suspects for Lily's murder.
Yes. Yep.
Right? So there's always between, I think interestingly actually, between Weevil and Veronica is this memory of Lily.
Yes. Right.
And that is kind of the ghost that haunts their relationship, right? And it's what brings them so close together, but then also kind of keeps them apart because they can't be romantic interests with each other.
Even though she ends up marrying another one of Lily's former lovers, Logan.
I like that you called him her lover.
Well, what else are you going to call
They're
him?
They're like 16.
You're right. They are 16.
You know.
But that is presented as a possibility for Lily and Logan in a way, or for Veronica and Logan, excuse me, in a way it is not for Veronica and Weevil.
Do you think there's something racialized then about the idea that the show cannot see Weevil as a true romantic interest
yes,
for Veronica?
Absolutely.
Because there is also all that stuff in the first and second seasons about that kind of, it's played as cross-class romance, but it's truly a cross-racial romance, right?
Correct.
So you have Paris Hilton in, like, the fourth episode, who is, a rich O'Niner, but secretly having this relationship with, I can't remember that character's name, but one of the PCHers, one of Weevil's bike gang, right? And then the reveal that Weevil himself has been in this relationship with Lily.
And in the movie, it's presented as this huge shock. Weevil is married to this gorgeous woman, and it's presented as like a, you got married? Like, very much surprising thing. And
I found it very frustrating going into season four to see a lot of that character. There's not a lot of character development in the film, right? The film is truly kind of a nostalgia trip that's a 2-hour version of an episode, taking those people 10 years into the future. But then any characterization or movement in those characters that happens in the film was kind of undone by season four.
Yes.
Right? So Weevil has gotten out of gang life in the film, right? Like, he's married and has a daughter, and then the film sets you up with the shooting in the end, right? So the Kane's mom, Duncan and Lily's mom, is the one who shoots him.
Her name's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't quite get there.
I can't remember it either.
Yeah.
But she's the one who shoots him. And then that was supposed to kind of lead into whatever the next storyline was going to be in 2013, which was about police corruption and the planting of evidence, right? And then that, of course, just fell by the wayside. And instead, we pick up season four somewhere else entirely.
Right.
Right. And Weevil has regressed.
He has. Yeah, he's just joined. He's back in the PCH and is kind of just a gangbanger again.
I believe his wife has left him. It's addressed very briefly. But
I don't even think I picked up on that.
Yeah, it's like one sentence.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and we're back to Veronica scolding him, like, in through multiple scenes. And you're not supposed to be on Veronica's side, but it still doesn't quite work for me.
Are you? This maybe is a question.
Am
I
putting my own reading out?
No, but I think this is a question I had for the entire season, which is, are we supposed to be on Veronica's side or not?
In season four, I genuinely don't know. In seasons one through three, we are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Right. She's the center of everything in those first three seasons and in the film.
But a lot of weird stuff came out of the woodwork on this one that I just didn't understand what was happening.
On season four.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to get back to this kind of question about what we found most interesting, for me, the hook was always that it was film noir in high school. Right.
Yes.
That was the thing to me that really drew me in. This comes out, let's see, the show starts in 2004. In 2006, Rian Johnson, who will go on to direct Star Wars The Last Jedi, he releases his first film, Brick, which is a film noir set in high school starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And that is much darker in tone, right, that film? Mm-hmm. But I'm a huge fan of film noir, and I always thought that it was so interesting to take that conceit, to take this kind of... Noir is not even a genre, really. It's just sort of a strange sort of collection of tropes and stylistic kinds of things. And to take those and to put them into high school, it was akin for me to what Buffy the Vampire Slayer did several years earlier in terms of making high school into a horror movie, right? So this was making high school into a kind of film noir. And I think that a lot of why I lost the magic of season four is because it doesn't mean as much when she's not a high schooler. And you cannot, I'm not saying you have to leave Veronica in high school the whole time. It would be absurd to like take Kristen Bell, who is now—
to Bart Simpson this?
Yes, yeah, exactly. She's a grown woman. But there has to be something that replaces the idea of a world that should be teen pop and sugar and, you know, who's going to take me to prom, spliced in with this really gritty corruption, crime, film noir kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's part of why season three wasn't as good as one and two, because even just that transition to college doesn't work in the same way, right? People are... in a high school, people are far more, it's much more of a contained environment. You know, you can't really, like, leave during the day. You're seeing the same people over and over. College, there's a lot of blow-ins. People come in who aren't from Neptune. It just, it doesn't work in the same way. And taking it even further from college into, like, life in your 30s exacerbated that even more so.
Yeah.
But I do think there was a way they could have recaptured some of the magic or, like, some of the nostalgia from seasons one and two. And I am talking about all of the loose threads that never got tied up, that I am furious about, that I expected, perhaps unreasonably, season four to solve for me. And I am so cranky about the fact they never got wrapped up.
Hit us with maybe one or two of your most kind of like cranky inducing threads from season three.
Thank you. I will. Well, these are from seasons one through three.
Oh, sorry.
Sort of
okay,
all together. But my first was with season four. I was like, where on earth are the Canes? That was infuriating to me. They just popped up in like the last couple of episodes as having made a new school. They like endowed a new high school, which again, I think they could have said something really interesting there about like land use and school zoning codes and like, you know, making a basically a public school that is essentially private by zoning it off in a, such a way that only the really wealthy students were going there. But it's dropped in and not explored at all.
I was shocked when Jake Kane was at that ceremony. And then they just were like, bye.
Yeah. So what are the Canes? What are the Canes up to? That is troubling me. Which links into another one of my big pet peeves, which is season three had its ups and downs. But it really regained its footing near the end of the season when they introduced this mystery of the castle, which was the secret society at Hearst College, the local college in Neptune that a lot of the people are attending. And it introduces this idea of the secret society that is like hundreds of years old at Hearst College. And it ends with Veronica breaking into the headquarters, seeing a portrait of Lily Kane, her murdered friend, and gradually realizing she is in Duncan Kane's home. That is
in Jake's home. Because Duncan, of
course,
I'm
sorry, Jake. I misspoke.
Duncan is on the run. Duncan has been disappeared from the show from season two.
You're correct. I'm sorry. Duncan is her ex-boyfriend. I'm talking about her, the generation above, the father.
His father.
And I misspoke. Yes. And sort of gradually realizing she's in Jake Kane's home and realizing that the castle with Jake Kane at the helm are still orchestrating things in Neptune. Which is interesting for a couple reasons. Wallace, her best friend, has been recruited to join this. She's Veronica's been not a great friend to Wallace all this season. I wondered if they were going to do something interesting with that. Like, Wallace was going to turn on her and take revenge on her in some way, as directed by Jake Kane. There's also a, there's a sex tape of Veronica going around the school as well that I wondered if maybe the castle might have had something to do with that. That never gets resolved.
I think we do get some kind of confirmation or hint. Okay.
But it's never confirmed. So I wanted to know what was going on at the castle because that's tied up with Jake Kane's shady schemes. He's clearly still got designs on Veronica. And then the last thing that really bothered me is the big mystery of season one. Is that Lily Kane's murder. And it's thought to be solved because Aaron Eccles, Logan's father, has thought to kill her. There are a couple hints throughout season one that indicate that that's maybe actually not the case. We may have tied this up really nicely. But to me, the biggest is Lynn Kane, Logan's mother, and Aaron's wife.
Sorry, Lynn Eccles.
Thank you. I'm so sorry. Okay. Lynn Eccles. I'm a mess.
It's okay.
Lynn Eccles. We see her abandoned car on a bridge. It is widely thought she has died by suicide by jumping off the bridge, but we never see a body. I remain convinced to this day that Lynn Eccles is not actually dead, that there's something going on there with Lily Kane's murder, and by extension, I don't think Logan Eccles at the end of season four is actually dead. We don't have a body for him either. I'm not convinced.
So you're saying...
I really think season four could have brought these threads together in an interesting way, and they failed me.
Season four wants you to remember what happened and to, when that character shows up, to say like, ah, yes, this is the person that Veronica sent to prison for raping, you know, scores of women. But then at the same time, it does not want you, until it's convenient, to put together that Big Dick is suspected of doing these bombings in Neptune. Dick's son was a bomber,
right,
who murdered multiple people with these IEDs,
yeah,
right?
And until the moment that the show wants you to make that connection, the show is actively kind of willing you not to make that connection, right? Even though it's really, like, apparent. Yes. And also, for God's sake, will someone check on Dick, please?
Oh, my God! His father... Okay. What... His brother has died by suicide by throwing himself off the roof of a hotel.
After murdering an entire school bus full of his classmates and murdering the mayor of the town who was sexually assaulting him for his entire childhood.
Yes, and attempting to rape Veronica's best friend, Matt, or one of her best friends, Mac.
Oh, and Cassidy Beaver raped Veronica.
And he raped, yes, Veronica.
In that, we find out in season two that that is who her rapist is from the season one storyline.
So that's bad. Then his father dies in this, sorry, spoilers.
Goes to prison. Is
out of prison.
And then dies.
His mother, as is demonstrated in season two, is just completely uninterested. I think she lives in Europe somewhere.
Yeah.
So she's just off doing whatever. His stepmother has been murdered by the Irish mob.
Yes.
Will somebody check on this poor child?
I can't believe we made it 34 minutes in without Molly bringing up the Irish mob. But I'm glad we got there. Yes, we should check on Dick. Everyone call Dick. But also to go back to
Because he's not
Europe,
okay. He's no, suffered a lot of trauma.
No, and he's also okay. Clearly not okay.
Yeah.
Like, when we do see him, he's played for laughs, but he's clearly not okay.
No, he's clearly not okay.
At any point in the run of the show. But to go back to your point about the show in this new season sort of wanting us to selectively remember, it also wants us to forget that not only did Leo meet Logan, but Deputy Leo arrested Logan.
Yep.
Like,
yes,
came to Veronica's house and arrested him.
Yes.
For murder.
I
right?
had forgotten about that. This is for the murder
and
on the bridge. The stabbing,
yes,
on the bridge.
Yes, for the stabbing on the bridge.
And almost murdered him at a high school dance for public intoxication. And Veronica talked him out of it.
Yes.
They said him.
What'd I say?
Murdered.
Jesus, what is up with my words today?
He did not almost murder,
yes,
Logan.
I'm so sorry.
Arrested him.
Leo almost arrested Logan at a high school dance for public intoxication, and Veronica talks him out of it.
I had actually truly forgotten this about season four, and now I'm upset all over again that it gets to be played for Veronica's sort of like two competing love interests and this jealousy angle, as though they don't know each other and don't know, like,
right,
the whole history.
They absolutely know each other. That was absurd, and it made me furious. Yes.
And also, like, that's the one flaw in New Logan. Like, New Logan is this perfect...
Yeah.
He's a perfect physical specimen. He is a literal triangle. He appears in the new season, like, out of the water, right? Like, with his surfboard. Yep. Like, the first shot with, like, women on the beach, like, drooling over him.
Yeah.
But he's also, like, emotionally perfect. And he's, like... encouraging Veronica to grow in this way that annoys her.
Which, oh my god, she needs to go to therapy.
She 100% needs
when to go she to was therapy. 17 and actively refusing like all emotional help and instead presented herself as this like very like hard-nosed figure. Okay, whatever, you're 17. Every 17-year-old thinks they know better than everyone else. But you are 32 damn years old, Veronica. Go to therapy, my god. Yeah.
Yes. Logan is not exactly emotionally perfect. He's like at 99%, right? Because of course he does punch the wall.
He does.
Yes.
And then they fuck.
Yes.
Right? This show, season four, is trying to give us some sense of the over, like, the lingering kind of trauma or upsettedness of Veronica, right? We have all the substance abuse, which I found to be very strange when lots of seasons 1 through 3 are about her mother's alcoholism and how she now Veronica doesn't drink in college because her mother's an alcoholic. And suddenly we have her just like, just dropping some MDMA like randomly on a Tuesday in season four. It was very weird. So they're like getting at, the season four is getting slowly into, like, let's get back into what Veronica's psychology is, right? And how she is doing and how she's dealing with this trauma. But then you knew we were going to have to talk about it at some point. We've mentioned it a couple times. The show forecloses any of that kind of processing by killing Logan in the end.
Yep.
Molly thinks maybe not.
I think he's not dead, the show wants you to think he's dead.
And I'm with you because it is suspicious when we don't see a body. I actually, though, to go back to something you said earlier, I do think that Lily Kane's murder is solved, right? Because there were so many red herrings, and then Aaron Eccles is kind of presented then as the boogeyman of the end of season one. He is the monster that imperils Veronica at the end of season one, right?
And he admits it at a point in season two to her.
He does.
Yeah.
The murder?
Yes. Yeah.
But that's one of the reasons I don't think he actually did it, because he gets some of the details of the murder wrong.
He does?
When he articulates them, yes. So when it was initially thought that Lily Kane, we always knew Lily Kane died of, forced to the head, right? And it was initially thought that the murder weapon was an ashtray. Keith eventually realizes it was not an ashtray. It was either an Oscar or an Emmy statue, like an award show statue, and realizes this but does not release this information publicly. And in season two, Aaron Eccles says, when I bashed her head in with an ashtray, and you can see that really throw Veronica for a loop, and she's clearly thinking about it because he uses the wrong murder weapon.
Oh.
Yeah.
It is unclear whether this is real or imagined, but the way the murder is filmed and shown in the last episode of the season, it's an ashtray.
Okay.
And I don't know whether that's Veronica imagining it, because there's other weird, impossible things happening, like the cameras that are secretly filming his bed, which is why Lily leaves and leads to this fight that leads to her murder. It's like there's like 5 cameras on the bed, and it's edited perfectly so that you can see her discovering what's happening.
And
there'd be like, that didn't happen. So it's sort of a fantasy. I don't know quite. It might also just be lazy.
Something that also really bothered me is Veronica throughout season one has these sort of like, she imagines different people killing Lily as her evidence changes. Okay. And that's always shot in the same way. That's kind of blurry. Okay. And the colors are very like, it's like a blue and green color scheme. And so when she's imagining the Aaron murder, it's shot in the same way, which I think was meant to tell you this is just, again, Veronica's envisioning of it, not actually what happens.
Oh, this is so weird. I don't know what to do with it, because, of course, the thing that's so noir about season two, then, is that he beats the murder charge, right? and you think, like, this is about the corruption of the justice system, right? This is when he confesses to doing it, right? Because
In the elevator.
He's been acquitted, and then he says, like, something about how great it felt mm-hmm. to bash your friend's head in.
Yes. I don't want to make the claim he's a good person. Like, yeah, I want to be very clear about that. Yeah.
No. I just always thought it was a really interesting, I thought if he had done it, it was a really interesting kind of film noir angle to have him then beat the murder charge. But then, of course, he is killed by, we assume, the Canes. Duncan has hired Duncan from his
life. It's part of the castle. That's what I'm saying. It's all part of the castle, and they never wrapped it up. You know that image of Charlie from It's Always Sunny pointing at things on the wall?
Pepe Sylvia.
Yeah, that's what this is right now for me. Yes.
I think that's fair. You have like a murder wall with red string from thing to thing.
I mean, there's a phenomenal amount of power that allows you to orchestrate a murder by phone. Yes. In California from a beach in Australia.
Yes.
That is also
infant is playing.
That's also a really interesting scene because it's also a coded message to the audience, right? So Veronica Mars at the end of season two, it was unclear because the WB, excuse me, I think it was on UPN.
It was UPN.
So
and
UPN,
then UPN WB.
And the WB were merging to create the CW, right? And we did not know, fans didn't know at the end of season two whether or not Veronica Mars was going to be renewed for season three. And that is actually a kind of coded message, right? Because, of course, Duncan calls Clarence Weedman on the phone and says, CW. And Clarence Weedman says, it's a done deal. Which is this interesting kind of coded. The show has a history of talking to fans through the kind of in-universe stuff of the show itself. Frustratingly, though, it seems to be a show that has started to feel that those fans want the wrong things from the show.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. that they are kind of a burden, not a boon, to the life of the show itself. Would you guys agree?
I would agree.
Yes. And this is my reading of the solution to the mystery of season four, which it turns out there's this group of web sleuths, I guess. Is that the term they use?
This is very frustrating. Yes. This is my, like, Molly's, like, rants about the castle and all the threads. This is my sort of, like, problem with my major problem with
season four. Your rant first, and then I'll do my reading.
Okay. So we are introduced to Patton Oswalt, who is a pizza delivery, his character is a pizza delivery guy in Neptune, who has been adjacent to this first bombing, right? And come to find out that he is part of a group, they're called the Murderheads. We are Murderheads is what he says. And essentially they are a group of passionate true crime fans who meet over Skype and try to kind of crowd solve these mysteries or do this kind of amateur detective work. And this is a allegory for a real life kind of community of people. They're known as web sleuths just because the forum where a lot of this stuff kind of got started in like web 2.0 is called web sleuths, and you can still go there. But they are played as pathetic.
Oh, very much.
Yes. That's the kindest word you could say for how they are played. I mean,
all of them across the board that we meet, like six of them, right?
Yes.
Three of them are truly important to the story, and all of them are like portrayed as losers, delusional losers, right? Who think that they know. They actually are kind of doing that conspiracy theory about how Aaron Eccles truly could not have killed Lily Kane for X, Y, and Z reason. And Veronica has to kind of sit there and like eat crow because she can't say anything about it, right? What's really frustrating as a true crime fan about this is, of course, Patton Oswalt's real life wife, Michelle McNamara, was herself a person who dabbled in this kind of web sleuths community. She is known as the writer who renamed the Golden State Killer, right? So he was originally, the man they've arrested for it is Joseph James DeAngelo. He was originally known by two different names. There was the East Area Rapist and then the original Night Stalker. And then people would call him Eerons, which is a sort of like spelling out of those abbreviations, right? And she was, Michelle McNamara was passionately invested in solving this crime and used some of these amateur detective techniques or skills to see if she could put together some solution to this series of crimes, which California, the state of California, knew was linked because they had matching DNA evidence from like 50 in-home rapes that happened in Northern California and then something like 8 or 10 murders that happened in Southern California. So she writes this article in the Los Angeles magazine, right? And she rechristens him the Golden State Killer, and she continues to investigate this. She tries to get the cold case investigators to be more interested in it, get them talking to each other across jurisdictions. And she actually died in 2017 or 2018.
Yeah, it's not been too long ago.
It was not long. I believe it was 2017. She died by, I think, an overdose of kind of a combination of painkillers and anti-anxiety medicine and all of this stuff. She died by suicide, essentially, but it's a kind of an accidental overdose. But it also is sort of, people have characterized her as being the last victim of the Golden State Killer, because she just got so into the story and trying to figure out what it is that happened with the story that it consumed her, and it really ended up kind of ruining her life and taking her out. Posthumously, Patton Oswalt helps to get her book, which was still in process, published, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, which is about the Golden State Killer. And within weeks of it being published, they, through familial DNA, law enforcement tracks down the person who matches this DNA that they have from these crimes and arrests Joseph James DeAngelo. I'm not saying that Michelle McNamara solved the case. She did not. But she kept pressure and interest on it long enough for this person to be caught and this horrific series of serial murders to be solved, right? And so I was so insulted, like, the memory of Michelle McNamara, and I was confused as to why, as a producer or a showrunner, you would ask Patton Oswalt to do this, right? To hey, play someone, play a character who is in some ways equivalent to your late wife, only play him as a delusional, pathetic loser who turns out to actually be the murderer. Yeah. Very insulting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed. And I also think there's something interesting or troubling about sort of pinning these crimes on this group of people. So these murder heads mm-hmm. do not meet in person. They right. meet digitally. Supposedly because they live in different places, although one of them, it turns out, is pretending to live in Washington, D.C., but actually is living
in San Diego.
In, yes. Yeah, like not too far away, another way in which they're pathetic, right? But they're relitigating mysteries of earlier Veronica Mars series, complaining about the way that they have been solved, right? Criticizing the way Veronica Mars is approaching this murder. And then by the end of it, Patton Oswalt has planted a bomb at the high school, which sends Veronica Mars like racing back to the high school. And when the show was sort of sustained for so long by an internet community, right? When it first aired, it was sort of one of the things that Television Without Pity was covering very extensively. When I missed episodes, that's where I caught up because I didn't always have the VCR set up. The Marshmallows is what they called themselves. They had street teams trying to encourage like random people to watch the show to get the ratings up. Mm-hmm.
The Kickstarter is, I mean, unheard of in the time, right? Mm-hmm. Like that they raised, fans of the show raised an enormous amount of money in order just to convince the studio that it was worth it to fund the rest of the film, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now we have this like guy on the internet, essentially, right, like forcing Veronica Mars back to high school.
And then the show blows all of that up.
Yeah. And then blowing it all
destroys
up.
It so that you can't, she cannot have that experience again.
Right. In like, and right. and makes Patton Oswalt's character the cause of it, which is sort of incoherent, but right, it's his last bomb in some ways, right? Like
his second to last bomb. It's his penultimate bomb.
The last bomb is Logan.
That's what I meant. The Logan bomb. I'm sorry. Yes. So sends her back to high school, blows up, and then blows up the like, what is become of the teen romance in this sort of incoherent like lashing out at
As though Rob Thomas were saying to the fans, you did this.
Yes.
Right? You made it so that we have to destroy this thing that you love about the show, which is the Veronica Logan bromance.
And you can't have it anymore.
You're not allowed to have it anymore.
I disagree because he's not dead. But, you know. This whole time he's been in the Navy for nothing. They never did anything with that job. He's on a naval mission. But.
Maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe. Well,
I've been in love with him since I was 16 years old, so please give me this.
Well, Rob Thomas just does not accept that out of you, Molly. He thinks that you're wrong for that.
Okay.
Right? And he said as much in interviews, right? So we have some of these interviews that he's done about this kind of rebirth of the show in which he... How do we want to do this?
This is about the new season. He says, Kristen Bell and I really wanted to keep doing more of these, like Sherlock and even Fargo. The thinking is that we need to survive as a noir detective show. And if we kept doing a show that was half teenage soap and half mystery, the fear is we would start feeling like nostalgia. Going full mystery show gives us our best chance to survive. And he said something similar about the ending of the movie where there's a breakup with Piz. He says, we needed a bittersweet ending because it's noir.
I'm unconvinced, and of course there's a article by Jenny Keegan of Reading the End who really takes issue with the kind of idea that a murder mystery cannot also be a teen soap, right? Because so much of this language feels so gendered, mm-hmm. right? In terms of they keep bashing Nancy Drew. This is not Nancy Drew. We can't be Nancy Drew anymore. Even the kind of Guardian piece from 2006 that talks about Brick and Veronica Mars together says, like, Nancy Drew, it's not. Like, what is your damn problem with Nancy Drew?
Nancy Drew is a badass.
Yes, she is. And her friend was a lesbian. And that's what I know about that.
Nancy Drew learned all of the streets and wherever she was from. I'm blanking on her hometown now. So she could pass the cab driver test just to solve a case.
Yes, she did.
I have lived here a lot of years in Atlanta. And I gotta use my GPS to go everywhere.
Nancy
Drew memorized them all in like 2 weeks.
To be fair, not even Nancy Drew could figure out Atlanta, I don't think.
Yeah.
It's the way they change because of redlining and racism.
Sure.
Right?
Yes.
Land use.
Yeah, land use.
and we're back to the... Yes, so he brought up Nancy Drew and talking about the pilot episode.
Yes.
And he said he wanted it to scream noir so that it wouldn't be Nancy Drew, essentially. Although the network made him change it to a high school opening.
Right, the cold open of the high school. Yeah.
So, the cold open, you mentioned it earlier, the sort of seedy motel. She's outside taking pictures. The network supposedly made him cut that and start at the high school.
Right.
It seems like he's still fighting this battle 15 years later.
No one's asking him to,
right,
though.
Exactly.
Right, like... Yeah, and I think that to say that we have to lean into mystery show because we can't be a teen soap anymore, for one thing, is really troublingly gendered. It has this air of like, well, if girls like it, we don't want to do it, right? Mm-hmm. But also that I think that makes him a fairly bad reader of film noir, yeah. right? Because So Jenny Keegan's article talks about the sort of what her rebuttal to Rob Thomas, that quote would be. She says the idea that the show would become derailed if positive relationships in the lead's life were pulling her towards domestic stability is deeply strange considering that the lure of domestic stability has always been one of the show's central tensions. Veronica's story is the story of a girl tempted by normalcy, but ultimately unable or unwilling to achieve it. And when I read that, I thought like, well, yeah, that's all of film noir, right? Like you have a male hero generally instead of a female hero. But if you think about Double Indemnity, if you think about Murder, My Sweet, Out of the Past, The Maltese Falcon with Humphrey Bogart, like these are all films in which our hero is tempted by some kind of idea that he can have this sweet and staid domestic life, and that is ripped away from him in the end, right? That the femme fatale is actually not kind of the person with whom he can build a life, right? Mm-hmm. And the show then to sort of say, like, well, we just had to murder Logan to get this domestic stability shit out of here, like, is deeply strange.
Right. And I think you said something in conversation before this, or maybe you wrote it in the notes for the show, but you mentioned Logan as femme fatale, which I'm fascinated by, and I want to hear this.
I like that, too.
I want to hear this. How should this work?
Well, so when we meet Logan initially, right, he is not a good person, right? He is Veronica's high school nemesis, right? He essentially tortures Veronica.
I think she calls him, like, a cold-blooded psychopath or something like that.
He also orchestrates bum fights.
He does.
He does orchestrate bum fights.
He does. He has some rich boy problems.
Yes.
Right? The show then kind of brings him into this world. We start to see the abuse that he suffers at the hands of Aaron Eccles, his father. And then the show brings him and Veronica together romantically relatively early on. It's not that far into season one that they are doing that kiss on the CD Motel balcony, right? But Veronica can never truly trust it, right? Which is, that's the kind of the central, the femme fatale kind of thing, that you have this person who seems like a great choice, like a great person, like a person you can build your life with. Mm-hmm. And yet they are kind of corrupted by their position, their need to get by, right? Barbara Stanwyck in Double Indemnity by wanting to bump off her husband. I'm trying to think. Anne O'Shaughnessy in Bridget O'Shaughnessy? Nope. I don't know. Maltese Falcon, that she secretly has been. She's the murderer all along, right? And she's been orchestrating this whole thing. So the show plays on that tension a lot. Yeah. And even into season four, having Logan be kind of a wild card with this violence, right? Mm-hmm. Punching the wall, and then turning around and being able to have sex with Veronica. And that being the kind of the unhealthy way that their relationship is happening, he's positioned as femme fatale all the way throughout, mm-hmm. right? But film noir does not then murder a femme fatale. Like, that's not, you don't just clear them off the board. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, yes. I also always think a lot about, I think probably what is probably the most famous clip in Veronica Mars, when they're at this anti-prom. So going, this is back to season two, and going back a little bit, Neptune has canceled their prom. Neptune High has canceled the prom for reasons I'm actually blanking on. Anyone remember?
It's because they were drinking. There was a bunch of drinking at some other event.
They're trying to punish the O-Niners for flouting the rules, for flouting the laws.
It's specifically the rich kids who are drinking.
But then the O-Niners decide to hold a private anti-prom. And near the end of the episode, Logan is intoxicated. He's very drunk. And he delivers this speech.
I thought our story was epic, you know? You and me.
Epic how?
Spanning years and continents. Lives ruined, bloodshed. Epic. But summer's almost here. We won't see each other at all. And then you leave town, and then it's over.
Logan,
I'm sorry about last summer. Oh, if I could do it over.
Come on. Ruined lives, bloodshed. You really think a relationship should be that hard?
No one writes songs about the ones that come easy.
And he has this very romantic vision of his relationship with Veronica. And something that I actually remember from that is not so much his speech, but the fact that Veronica answers with it, do you think a relationship is supposed to be that hard? Which is something I return to a lot with this because, I mean, kind of clearly Veronica does think relationships are supposed to be that hard. She makes her relationships pretty hard, right?
Yeah.
She makes them unnecessarily difficult.
And that the moment of violence in the new season, the way the show films that, it suggests that Veronica is pulling it out of him on purpose.
Yes.
Yes.
Right? And there's this way that, like,
adrenaline junkie. She wants the conflict.
Right. That she's like pushing him into that. And this is the way that the show seems to be filming it. That's also the title of the last
year's episode, Bloodshed.
Yeah. Right. Where he.
And they never pick up on it in his final voicemail monologue. It is not referenced, which I thought was incredibly sloppy writing.
You know why? Because he's not dead.
You have got to close the loop on that.
No, there's no need to close the loop. He's still alive.
Yeah, I just think there were so many more interesting ways that they could have played the conflict between Veronica with this adrenaline junkie side and then also this side that craves domestic stability and wanting to kind of like whether or not they're going to get married, et cetera, et cetera. And even too, so the show does this really cruel fake out right before the death where she's shown up for the wedding and he's not there and you think that he's just not coming, right? I was like weeping. I'm like on my couch, just like tears streaming down my face. That actually, to if you just wanted Logan kind of off the board or out of the way, or you wanted to really kind of introduce more conflict into their relationship as the central relationship, why not let that be the case?
Yes.
Why not let it be that he has actually decided after she's turned on his proposal and then come back and said, actually, yes, let's do it.
And he's seen his ex-girlfriend at the marriage license place.
Yes.
The marriage license store.
And like chases her.
Whatever that place is.
Chases her out, calls her back, and then the scene cuts. Going into.
Who was there to file for a divorce also.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Veronica's old college roommate.
Veronica's old. Mac's old college roommate, but Veronica.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Mac's old roommate.
Veronica essentially lived there, so. Yes.
Yeah, and like I knew something bad was going to happen because the internet is what it is. And I thought that, and I was relieved, like, oh, he's just going to jilt her.
Right.
I feel much better. And then he shows up, and then, like, I realized something else was going to happen. And this is actually why, Molly, I think he's gone, is that if he did that and then faked his death the very next day.
No, he didn't fake his death. It's something to do with the Navy. They're sending him on some secret mission.
I just think that's... And we just had a conversation about how cruel Logan was at the beginning. That would be a new depth of cruelty, even if the Navy made him do it.
I'm just saying, they made him a naval commander or whatever, a naval officer for no reason. They've done nothing with his job.
It was to put him in, it was because Rob Thomas thought that women wanted to see him in that sexy uniform, right? It was to objectify him in the film.
Stop giving me that's a fan element I don't want, Rob Thomas. Anyway, he's not dead.
That uniform was too ill-fitting.
It's
too
true.
Actually.
It's true. It was a very weird, purposes. Like, JAG moment, right? Like,
it was very JAG.
He even said in the movie, when she gets off the plane, he's like, I just met with JAG. Like, he literally says
that. Well, that's because he is under suspicion for murder again.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I think you're giving the show, Molly, I think you're giving the show too much credit.
You're
giving the writing of the show too much credit in terms of being able to actually spin these really interesting kind of corruption storylines or
well, then they should hire me to work for them.
Kareem
Abdul-Jabbar hired me.
Yeah, no, I think it's another moment where it approaches something interesting and then backs off. I think that's just what this show does. And whether it's land use or whether it's
racial politics
or domestic stability versus adrenaline in these sort of noir spaces, it's going to raise the question and then not answer it. And the easiest way to not answer this question was to blow it up.
Well.
All right. So maybe then our final kind of thought here should be, if and when they make season 5, will you watch it?
Absolutely.
100%. No doubt.
Can we meet back here and scream about it?
Yes.
And whether or not it's narratively unsatisfying.
When it is narratively unsatisfied, we will be back here because we are junkies.
Yes, agree.
Oh my God, we're Veronica.
We're Veronica.
We are...
Just keep chasing the storm.
Veronica.
Oh. Years, continents, bloodshed.
Listen.
Well,
on that
I hope we've all sold you on wanting to watch Veronica Mars, if you haven't already.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.